Hi, this is the Pits and Gigs podcast, where we relive the years of Gigmas past. I'm your usual host, Jamie, and today I'm joined by George. How's it going, George?
Yeah, nice one, Jamie. It's a pleasure to be on. I've been looking forward to this all day and reliving a gig, which I feel is even more important now in these times where we've been away from it for so long. So definitely really looking forward to this.
And before we do jump onto the actual gig itself, we must plug your own little podcast venture there.
Yeah, perfect. So yeah, we run the No Name Ever podcast, Burnley's first and best podcast, I'd say, at the moment. We've had a bit of competition in recent years, but yeah, No Name Ever, it's been going for quite a while now, and I was lucky enough to join the team about a year and a half ago now, so really enjoying doing that. And it is nice to talk about football in sort of a retrospective way, because normally that's the sort of thing that you save for the pubs. So it's sort of an extension of that in a way.
And when we talk about Burnley, we're talking about the UK's favourite underdog football club, I think we're called now.
Yeah, according to Alan Pearce, anyway, that's our nickname. Whether it's true or not, it doesn't matter, because that's the marketing spiel that we're going with.
So today we're going to be talking about Cortinas at Old Trafford Cricket Ground in Manchester, May 2017. And obviously the reason George has put this is because of... It was a special gig for him, but also Manchester was recovering from a terrible event that occurred just 5 days before this event, which was the bombing of the Manchester Arena following an Ariana Grande concert. So we will be touching on that later on, but it's going to be kind of one of those where we have a solemn kind of vibe for a little bit, but then we're just going to try and pick up off it and, you know, let the good times roll. I don't know. Is that the right thing to say?
Yeah, certainly. Because I think it's more of, it was definitely an act of defiance and celebration of Manchester and the North West in a way. So I think obviously it is a somber moment, but it's also a proud moment to look back on, and it's a showing that, you know, we won't be beaten. So I think definitely it is a celebration in a way, certainly.
Yeah, and it was interesting. We spoke about it briefly off recording there, that neither of us are from Manchester, and I'm sure a lot of people who attended the show wasn't from Manchester, but this kind of event sent shockwaves throughout the Northwest. So it wasn't just a party, an act of defiance from Manchester, it was an act of defiance for the Northwest of England, because everyone was hurt by this, and it was a way to say, you know, we're still here, you know, we're still shouting loud and proud, you know. So kind of, before we kind of touch too much onto that, though, we'll talk about Cortinas as a band before, obviously, this gig. So they're an English band formed in Middleton, which I believe is a part of Manchester, in 2006 by Liam Frey, Michael Campbell, Daniel Conan Moores, Mark Pello, who was replaced by the band's producer, Joe Cross, in 2015. So do you want to tell us, George, how you got into the Cortinas? Because they're not really a band you'd hear anywhere other than the Northwest.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, it's quite an interesting one, because I have vague recollections of originally seeing them at Glastonbury in 2008 when I was seven. So obviously that's quite a long time ago now, but it, obviously being a young seven-year-old then, it didn't exactly click. And I first really got into them, it sort of connects with the whole Manchester scene really, is I remember in 2015, I think it was November, I Googled it today, I came home from school one day, and my dad said, I've managed to get us tickets for the Stone Roses at the Etihad next year. And that's when I first sort of tumbled completely into the Manchester scene, really. Before then, it was all like Robbie Williams and Candy and pop songs like that. And then after getting tickets for the Stone Roses, I remember going into my conservatory, I remember it quite vividly, and I picked up my phone and put Stone Roses. I've heard of them, but I went and put on like Fool's Gold, and I hated it. I really didn't like it at first. I was thinking, what is this? It's just not going anywhere. And then eventually, obviously, I got round to listening properly, and then suddenly it was just like, wow, this is incredible. And then it all went down the rabbit hole then, and I went into, you know, the Smiths, Joy Division, Cortinas, and all the Manchester scene, really. And when it was announced that Cortinas were going to be supporting the Stone Roses at the Etihad, that's when I first really started listening to them. And it was just after we bought the tickets that Concrete Love, which we'll be talking about later, Concrete Love album came out. So it was around the start of 2016 when I first got into them, which some may say is obviously quite late, them being around since like 2008-ish. So yeah, that's how I first got into them, was through the Stone Roses in a way.
So let's rewind a little bit, because from social media, all I've ever known you for is your kind of Britpop kind of scene and Manchester bands and stuff like that. You're telling me you was a big Robbie Williams fan beforehand. Let's explore this a little bit.
Yeah, exactly. It's one of them where around like the 2010s, it was all like the pop scene and Bruno Mars and just that and Maroon 5. And that's completely what I was like. I remember having it on my iPod, and I remember actually finding it a year or so ago and just looking through all the old music. And I was, yeah, Bruno Mars, Robbie Williams, absolutely loved it. But obviously then I matured into a much better listening taste, I'd like to think now.
So yeah, like you said, the Cortinas, I should stop calling them the Cortinas because they dropped it in 2014, was it? They dropped the, it's just Cortinas now.
Yeah, I think it was around there, early 2000s, certainly before, early 2010s, certainly before I got into them, yeah.
Yeah, I can't get over calling them the Cortinas, but either way, I'm sure I won't get a lawsuit on me calling them the Cortinas. They've released six studio albums to date. The debut album was released in 2008 called St. Jude, featured the singles Cavortin, What Took You So Long, No You Didn't, No You Don't, and we have to say it, the only song that's ever gone out the northwest of theirs is Not 19 Forever. Nothing more to be said on that. The second album...
I was just going to say, this album's quintessentially Cortinas to me. This is obviously, it's harsh to say when it's their debut album and you say, oh, they've not done as good since. I still love the later albums, but St. Jude is the definition of Cortinas. I mean, there's some absolutely cracking songs on there that are still a major part of their live act today. And it's really funny in a way how, obviously we'll touch upon it, the lack of mainstream media attention on Cortinas. And there's a really famous a review from The Independent in 2008 when they reviewed St. Jude. And it was something along the lines of, there's some nice hooks and stuff in this album. But then he went on to say, I confidently predict that exactly no one will be listening to it in 10 years' time. And here we are talking about it 13 years later. And I remember when they were doing a string of shows to celebrate the 10th anniversary, they just had massive billboards up in Manchester with I confidently predict no one will be listening to it, quote on the billboards next to the Cortinas, and underneath it just said, still here.
That's true Northern grit kind of sarcasm, that is. It's interesting that they didn't get much airtime, though, because I was thinking to 2008, I was thinking where I was in 2008. Now, in 2008, I wasn't the quite poppy person you was. I was kind of into bands like, you know, kind of early Kaiser Chiefs, Pigeon Detectives, Hardfire, you know, indie bands. And the Cortinas seemed to really fit into that, and that was what the radio was playing. It was playing this kind of indie band scene, you know. So they should have really, theoretically, had more. Or was it that maybe the indie band scene was too saturated and they just didn't get through? You know, because the likes of Pigeon Detectives, Hoosiers, you know, all that, they're huge. But like, and they got huge airplay, but these didn't. Maybe it was just too saturated.
Yeah, it's really interesting because I remember I was reading, just to sort of look up before we did this, I was reading an interview with Liam. And it was quite interesting how he made the comparison to... He talked along the lines of the saturation because he said the Kooks, they're... I'm not a massive listener of the Kooks, but the quintessential album, it came out on the same day as Arctic Monkeys' debut album, and it sold almost as many copies as the Arctic Monkeys' first album, but it just didn't get... It didn't get, obviously, the attention because at the same time, you've got this absolutely cracking album from Arctic Monkeys. So it's just really, it's obviously, it just hits along that saturation line. And I think along with there's sort of a classist element to the lack of coverage of Cortinas in a way. It's like this brash band from Manchester up north. And I mean, it's actually interesting. All of Cortina's albums have pretty much been in the top five or there or thereabouts in the albums charts, just off the strength of their following, mainly up north. And yet at the same time, there's just been barely any coverage of it. Like, St. Jude went to number four in the album charts. Now, obviously, I was very young at the time, so it wouldn't have come up on my radar anyway. But obviously, you're saying it didn't come up on your radar. It's no surprise. Even though it was a top five album, you know, if something doesn't get enough media coverage on the radios, I mean, apart from word of mouth and maybe living in the Manchester scene, you're not going to come across it. Because a lot of their early following was just built on word of mouth and like an incredible amount of gigging just around Manchester.
So St. Jude was, like I said, the quintessential Cortina's album. In 2010, they released Falcon, featuring the singles You Overdid It All, Take Over the World, and Scratch Your Name Upon My Lips. In 2013, they released Anna, featuring the singles Lose Control, Van de Graaff, and Anna, Are You In Love With An Ocean, which I remember hearing that actually around the time it was released, I think. So that was probably one of my first exposures to the Cortinas, probably. Then they released Concrete Love in 2014, Mapping the Rendezvous in 2016, and last year they released an album called More Again Forever. So do you kind of, I know you mentioned that St. Jude was kind of what you'd always imagine from the Cortinas, but do you have like a favourite in there that you'd always go back to, or would it be St. Jude?
Yeah, I think definitely there's the, it was quite interesting how the last album, More Again Forever, the album before that, Mapping the Rendezvous, was in 2016. It was good, but it wasn't, I think it's probably my least favourite of their albums. And obviously it's quite a big break between Mapping the Rendezvous and More Again Forever, of 4 years. And Liam actually said after Mapping the Rendezvous, you know, they went on massive just gigs after gigs after gigs, and he did record an album, a complete album, while on the road, which was going to be the More Again Forever album. And then he said he listened to it back and he just thought, this isn't up to our standard, and he binned a complete album and completely wrote a new one. More Again Forever. Yeah, so, and More Again Forever, to be honest, I absolutely love it. It takes there's a lot of sort of new sounds in there which you wouldn't think. Or, you know, it's easy to get boxed into a corner as this indie guitar band in a way. And More Again Forever certainly takes them into a different direction. And there's a lot of other influences in that album. But if I was to go back and listen to an album, Concrete Love was brilliant. You know, there's Small Bones, which is one of their best sort of melodic and live songs. It really gets the fans on the feet. And then There's Summer, which is a brilliant tune as well, and Beautiful Head. All of their albums are pretty good. Mapping the Rendezvous, not my favourite, but Falcon, Anna, Concrete Love, More Again Forever, there's some absolutely brilliant tunes on there. And it's got to an interesting point now, obviously, like all bands get to, where you're thinking, how are you going to fit all this on the set list? Like, you want all these songs, but obviously you can't go on for hours upon hours.
Yeah. It's a tough one, all right. You just don't know where to start, but... No, I mean, it's good though, because I mean, a lot of bands do have, even if you love a band, they have their album that you just makes you feel sick to listen to. You know, I think every one of my bands have that album. So no, but it's good that you kind of they've stayed consistent, and to scrap an entire album, that takes something. I think it's not just the scrapping of the album that takes something, but it's having to rewrite something that you consider to be up to scratch and doing it better the next time. Like, you're almost putting the pressure on yourself to write it better.
Yeah.
Liam Frey has a lot of pride in what he does, you know, you have to almost. You almost have to, but, you know, it's a lot of pressure on himself, that is, so.
Yeah.
But sounds like you hit the nail on the head with the album, so I haven't seen any of the reviews from it, but you're saying it's a cracking album.
Yeah, it's interesting. Like, obviously, a lot of bands just get to that point where it's sort of you're on the road and you're doing album after album after album, and sometimes like your standards can slip, and it just all gets a bit too much. Sometimes I've been listening to the Blossoms do a podcast called the Blossoms Pubcast. Brilliant, really cracking group of lads. And then they were saying they've just released their third album. When it came to the lockdown, they were reaching a point as a band where they were sort of saying to themselves, you know, we could do with really taking a break and a step back here. And lockdown sort of offered that to them involuntarily. And it sort of gave them that break. And they said they took a few months off. And then suddenly, I think it was in August last year, went and recorded a full... They've got their fourth album ready to go, even though they've not even toured the third album yet because of lockdown. So yeah. I think sometimes fans just need... And look, it's really easy to get into a rut of just album recording, gigs. And sometimes, obviously, standards do slip. But, I mean, they came back with a cracking album, More Again Forever. And I think, apart from Map in the Rendezvous, I mean, it's still a decent album. There's just a few songs I don't really like. Their full discography is absolutely super. I mean, I'm just looking through some of the singles now of Falcon, which was their second album. The Opener, which is one of the best live songs, which, you know, their whole live gig sort of revolves around. Obviously, not 19 Forever, which I'll discuss when we talk about Old Trafford, but The Opener, You Overdid It, Doll, you know, Take Over the World. These are some absolutely brilliant tunes. And then you've also got little tunes which aren't as maybe big for people, but like Summer and Sycophant, which can come into the live set to mix it up from time to time. So, yeah, they're in a really lucky position where now they've got, is it five albums? Six studio albums where you can go to a gig not knowing what to expect and be looking forward to sort of maybe a little tune that you've not heard for years, like a B-side, you know, like Smith's Disco, which, you know, that's an iconic Cortinas song that probably only Cortinas fans will know. I urge anybody to go out there and listen to Smith's Disco. I mean, that goes off live.
Yeah, I mean, no, I can relate to that. I'm a big fan of The Killers, and The Killers do the same thing. They throw in the odd track there that only the fans would know. And I think it creates an intimate moment for the fans then. You know, a great intimate moment where everything isn't just a hit all the time. And there's the songs where you can... I don't know if you do it, but if you ever see a band like the Cortinas, where, like, they play a song and you just kind of see people mouthing, like, and you're all singing along and you're just like, yeah, I'm in the club here. You know, I know all these lyrics and stuff. I don't know if you do that. Like...
Yeah, totally. And, well, the thing you can find with that is, in Manchester, everyone knows every lyric. So you've got no worries about it there. But when you watch a Manchester band, maybe down south, I remember watching Blossoms in Bath last year, and my goodness, there's a difference in the crowd. In Manchester, obviously, you've got a cult following. In London, you've got quite a lot of people from Manchester who come down, but London's also got a really strong music sense about it. When I saw Blossoms in Bath, I mean, even some of the mainstream songs, I was one of the few that knew the lyrics. So you certainly get that sometimes where you're thinking, come on, guys, why don't you all know the lyrics like me?
Is Bath even a big music city?
No, definitely not. I've just actually bought tickets to see DMAs. I'm looking forward to it because I love seeing DMAs, but at the same time, I'm thinking, oh, it's not going to be the same as having a crowd that really knows them. So, Bath's not a particularly music city, but I'm quite lucky that London's nearby, obviously just a train away, and then Bristol's 10 minutes away on the train. I've been to a couple of gigs in Bristol. Miles Kane, I saw there, you know, the crowds are pretty decent there, so I've got enough to keep me going.
So, coming back to this particular gig then, we touched upon at the start that this gig took place 5 days following the Manchester Arena bombings. And I actually thought, because it was my friend who told me about this gig around the time, I thought this was actually in response to the attack, to like we say before, show defiance for the Northwest. Turns out when I was looking at today, the tickets went on sale a lot before that. So do you want to kind of talk to us about the whole process of getting tickets and kind of lead up the events? Obviously, you've heard about Manchester, so what's going through your head during that time? You know, you want to talk to us about that?
Yes, certainly. Yeah, it is quite interesting because obviously you could think that, thinking it's only 5 days after the event, you can think, oh, it must have been in response. But it was quite a surprise when obviously that happened. But I remember getting the tickets because it was going to be my first big like outdoor gig. Obviously, I'd been to festivals and stuff, but it was going to be my first outdoor gig for a specific band. So I was really looking forward to it, especially with Cortinas. They've had a steady progression in Manchester, where this was the sort of this was their crowning moment. And we'll talk. I'll talk about it later how it sort they sort of got robbed of that, because the sort of the whole thing about the Manchester attack sort of took over. And but yeah, I'll discuss that later. But it's interesting how they've had a steady progression from doing Manchester Arena around 2010 to doing Delamere Forest, to then going on to do Castlefield Ball, then 25,000 at Heaton Park, and then Old Trafford was going to be 50,000. And obviously, it's a big step, because Old Trafford's the kind of venue that you see Radiohead, Oasis, Arctic Monkeys play there, and then all of a sudden Cortinas had made it there. So it was going to be the big crowning moment for the band. So after seeing them, I saw them support the Stone Roses, who I mentioned before. And obviously that night was incredible, because I mean, I'm so lucky to have seen the Stone Roses. Yeah. But at the same time, I remember one of the defining moments of the night was actually when Cortina supported them and played Not 19 Forever, and the crowd just went absolutely wild for it. And, you know, it's become an absolute cult classic live now. But the crowd, I still remember the crowd at this very moment at the night, just setting off all the flares, and just from seeing them with the Stone Roses in 2016, I'd just absolutely fallen in love with them. So getting the tickets, you know, we were so buzzing. And then the Manchester attacks happened, and it was I just remember it was the same with the Bataclan attacks as well. You just glued to the telly all night, just sort of worried. And I knew people at the time who'd gone to the gig and had family going to the gig. And it was just, it was so close to home, because, like, as you say, obviously we're not from Manchester, but I have quite a lot of friends who were sort of, their families were involved, and, you know, they suffered like injuries and everything. And there was someone that lost people from Blackburn. And there was someone from Burnley as well. So, you know, it really hit close to home. And then you've got this for a few days thinking, is it going to go ahead? Should I be going? And there was obviously a whole furore about, should we go? I remember standing in the kitchen with my dad, and we were discussing it. And I was of the viewpoint, like, you can't let them win. We should go for that very reason. But at the same point, my dad was obviously maybe a bit less naive than I was, and was thinking, should we really go? And there was actually, I was looking through a live transcript on Manchester Evening News today from the day. And I'll just read you a quote that I thought was pretty, it was quite moving, really, reading it. And it was from a woman called Becky Williams, who was at the Manchester Arena when the bomb went off. And she was also attending the Cortinas gig. And this is a quote from her. So she said, I can't live my life in fear. I want to come here and sing for the people who didn't come home on Monday night. And I just found that, you know, really moving, because that's what it was all about. It was an act of defiance. And I think it was only 3 days before Cortinas and Liam Frey came out and said, look, we're going ahead with this Saturday's gig. Please come. You know, we understand people are scared. They put loads of extra security in place. And this is a moment for the city of Manchester and the whole of North West to come together and say, you know, we won't be defeated by hate. Hate won't tear us apart. And obviously, as the week went on, lots of tickets did go on sale from people who were rightly worried to go. But at the same time, a lot of people bought them tickets. And in the end, it was just an absolutely brilliant show of defiance.
I think I've touched upon it on the post-start recording. It did send shockwaves. And yeah, I know people who were caught up in it as well. And to this day, when I was doing a bit of background reading on it, because it was almost like we start talking about this, and we obviously start talking about this on Twitter beforehand. When I realised the connection that this had, you almost have to revisit that day. It still sits deep. Don't know if it's the same, but yeah, it still sits deep. But I remember that we went to a gig in London 2 days after, and we were going to see an Irish band, and they stopped their show mid-show. All pulled some like pub chairs onto the stage, and we all did like a minute silence, just to kind of, and that just shows the shockwaves in the Northwest and everything. And I think Cortinas did a huge thing in being this Manchester-based band, you know, who almost, like you said, a voice for the North. Like, no one listens to them because no one listens to this Northern gritty band. Like, and they're almost like a voice for the North, a beacon for the North, to try and say, we are defiant, we're not going to be defeated. You know, Old Trafford Cricket Down isn't a million miles away from the arena, you know. So we're just down the road here, and you can probably hear us at the arena, to be honest. We're not going to be defeated. So, yeah, it was a big, big call for the Cortinas. So, and were you, in the lead-up to it and going in, do you want to talk us through the security and how you felt kind of going into there before we touch on the support acts and stuff like that?
Yeah, certainly. I mean, I think Cortinas were the perfect band, really, for the moment, in a completely accidental way. Because it was just scheduled for 5 days after the 22nd of May, which was unfortunately the day of the Manchester attacks. And there's a thing about Cortinas, really, where they are the Manchester band for sort of my generation. Obviously, generations before, there's always been the Manchester band. So you had Joy Division, you know, you had the Smiths, you had New Order, then you had Oasis. And for my generation, who came after all those bands, Cortinas are the Manchester band for my generation. So it was sort of horribly appropriate timing for them to be the band that would act as this sort of beacon of hope for the whole of the Northwest and for Manchester after the attacks. And there was certainly trepidation, obviously, leading into the event, because it's only 5 days after the attacks. It's this massive outdoor gig in Manchester, literally just down the road. I mean, people will be getting trains into Victoria Station, which is where Manchester Arena is, and then going to the Cortinas gig. It is so close. And obviously, there was people who didn't want to go. When I was reading that Manchester Evening News live transcript of the day, there was a fella who'd been to every Manchester Cortinas gig since 2011, and he decided this was a step too far, really. But luckily, on the day, the security, absolutely brilliant. It was a real community spirit, and it was different to normal, don't get me wrong, because every sort of 10 yards you went, you'd see a policeman with a machine gun just hoisted in his hands, ready. You know, on every street corner, there was police there with machine guns. There was so much security, but at the same time, they were so friendly, and they understood what it meant to be there, and they were just there to do their job. And Liam talks about it afterwards. The real heroes of the day were obviously the fans in attendance who had the courage to go and attend the concert, but also the people who were working on it, the policemen, the people who were working behind the bars, the security on the gates, the people just picking up the rubbish, you know, everyone who decided to come to work that day and weren't scared off by this person who was trying to sort of attack our way of lives. And there was something really... There was a connection with the Manchester attacks, because the Manchester attacks were on a gig where parents were just bringing their children to go and see Ariana Grande. And it was sort of an attack on the sort of creative community, on the music industry. It wasn't, there's no way, I'm not in any way trying to belittle this, but it wasn't a car plowing into a group of people. It was an attack on a live music venue. And it's something that we just don't particularly see. So to actually have a live gig on the following Saturday, and for that to be the act of coming together and saying, no, you know, we're not going to accept that, there was something very powerful about it.
I'm sorry, can I just touch upon something here? And we're about to get a little bit serious for just a short second here. But as this podcast goes out, and if you're listening back to this podcast in future times, you touched upon something there that people's dads, mums, uncles, brothers and all that stood on the corner and protected the people in uniform. At the same time of this podcast going out, the public are attacking the police, who are there to do a job. They are there to do nothing more than a job. I understand you're annoyed. I understand you're angry. But let's look back at the time where we all pulled together, not 4 years ago, and we all appreciated their job. Now stop being an ass. Stop attacking the police, because they are someone's mother, father, brother, sister. They're not there to hurt you. You're just being an asshole. Stop it. Back to the gig. Sorry, George. Just had to. It's been grinding me. Been grinding me, and I needed to say something. When you said that there, that they were friendly, they were there doing a job, it just, you know, it's been grinding me. So, just moving on slightly then from that very serious note, we'll pick up the mood a little bit because we got a bit kind of down in the ditches there. Yeah, so, sure. This gig had, what was it, four support acts? Three support acts?
Three. And all Manchester bands, because the sort of point of the gig was for Manchester to sort of say, look, we're still here. This is, you know, this is what the music that we're putting on the map, really. And I was big fans of all three support acts, so it was pretty lucky for me.
Yep. So we'll start with Blossoms, who are an indie pop band from Stockport. I've got to admit, I've only really come across one of their songs, which is Charlemagne. So do you want to talk us a bit about the Blossoms set and kind of your association with the Blossoms and kind of just remember what you can from their set, really?
Yeah, certainly. This was the first time I've actually seen Blossoms. I've seen them, I think, three times since. You know, I think up there with DMAs is my favourite band. So to see them in such a... This was obviously right at the start of their, like... So without saying, without being scripted, at the start of their blossoming career. But it was really nice to see them. And it's quite interesting because, or quite funny, really. I remember the exact moment that I first heard Blossoms. It was me and my dad were doing the North Coast 500 in 2015, which is a lovely little like Route 66 of Great Britain, really, in Scotland. And we were driving around yet another lock. And I remember it was on, I think it might have been on Radio 2 or something like that, where Tom Ogden, who's the lead singer of Blossoms, was on for an interview. And it was probably the song, you know, it was when they were releasing Charlemagne. And I just remember hearing that and I was hooked from there, listening to Tom, listening to Charlemagne. That had me hooked. So then to go and see them, obviously supporting Cortinas, was brilliant. I can't really particularly remember any songs of note during the set, but it was just one of them where I saw them before they sort of really got big, and now they're scoring number one albums in the charts and everything. And I really love Blossoms as a band now. So it's really nice to look back and think I saw them supporting Cortinas in 2017. And then only a couple of years later, they were headlining at Edgeley Park, which is Stockport's ground. So they were headlining their own sports venue in their own right.
Jesus, yeah, that's amazing. And I remember thinking, is ever a Northern English band to do this? Like, I remember seeing them, they did a few songs for the Rugby League Grand Final, I think it was last year, year before. I'm like, you'd only ever get a Northern band to do that because it's only Northern English people who don't understand Rugby League. I just saw them, I'm like, that's crazy. I think it might have been last year because I think the stadium was empty. I think it was at Old Trafford last year. Rest our souls with kind of fans.
Yeah, it's certainly the poison chalice having to do stuff like that without fans, isn't it? I mean, I remember seeing The Weeknd doing the Super Bowl and he put on a cracking show, fair play to him, but it's just a bit of a shame, isn't it, not to have fans. But hopefully we'll be back to those sort of venues being full towards the end of this year. Fingers crossed, anyway.
Fingers crossed. The next band we're going to touch on was Cabbage. I've never heard of these, but these are from Mossley. Found in 2015. You might have to give me a bit more of a background on these because I've literally never heard of Cabbage, so walk away.
Absolutely brilliant band. I really do love them. They're a completely a band that won't go down well with a radio audience. They've got a lot of punk elements to them. There's a lot of swearing involved. There's a lot of risque politics involved. They're really left leaning. They're vociferous in saying we're a Labour supporting band, and a lot of their politics goes into their songs, which I absolutely love. You know, music's a really good being to carry politics and to push it forward. And so they're certainly not going to come onto the mainstream, let me tell you that. But they're a brilliant band, and a band that really says it how it is that there's a, I mean, their main song is called Uber Capitalist Death Trade, which, you know, tells you a bit about it. And I'll actually just read a lyric that I wrote down from Uber Capitalist Death Trade, which will sort of give you an idea of the band that they are. And it goes, "Don't worry, because capital is cash. No death is not added up as expenditure for the nation's grace. I don't feel alive." You know, and there's a lot of politics in their songs, but they take a lot of inspiration from The Fall, who were a brilliant Manchester band through the 1970s, 80s, 90s, 2000s. I mean, Marquis Smith, an absolute genius, the lead singer of The Fall, and they went on for 40 or 50 years as a brilliant punk band. And the producer of a lot of The Fall's albums is actually producing Cabbage's albums as well. And there's a lot of inspiration from The Fall in Cabbage. And I can't particularly remember that much from the Old Trafford gig in terms of Cabbage, only that the venue was it was filling up at the time. You know, it wasn't full. But I went and saw Cabbage a couple of years later at Kendall Calling. And it was the sweatiest gig I've ever been to. It was one of them where you're inside a tent called the house party tent, and I think the capacity was about 800, but there was at least 1,200 squeezed in there. And it was me, and just imagine a load of, you know, 6'2" punk heads stomping about. And I walked out, and you'll love this, I was wearing my Burnley shirt, and I walked out of the gig afterwards, and the claret was a completely different colour, let's say. That's how sweaty it was.
Christ.
A brilliant live band, really get the crowd going, and the perfect sort of band to have on before Cortinas to get the crowd going. And they've got a massive northern soul about them. There's a song called Wigan Pier based off the George Orwell novel or poem. There's Tell Me Lies About Manchester, another song of theirs. So obviously you've got the charlatans on one hand, who will discuss, you know, this massive behemoth of Manchester music, and at the same time you had Cabbage and Blossoms, who were certainly up and coming, and I hope Cabbage go on to better things in a way. But as I say, they're never going to be your Radio One players, let's just say that.
I think Cabbage sound right on my street, actually, so I might have to give those a listen after we stop recording. Sound very like a Manchester's version of Enter Shikari, where it's very political, kind of punk rock, kind of. I like that. I like anyone who can spread good lyrical political views and spread the good word of the lefties. We should start becoming Jehovah's Witness, like, kind of style things. Have you heard the good word of the lefties? the last band we're going to touch on shocked me, really, because I would consider these a bigger band than Cortinas, and it's no, you know, thing against Cortinas, but these have been around since the 1980s, all through the 1990s, where you had the likes of Stone Roses, you know, and Oasis and all that, and they've stayed constant. I know that you're a big fan of them because Tim Burgess only did his listener party recently. He was heavy on social media, but that's the Charlatans. Talk through what it was like seeing those, because they're a huge band. You know, they've lived through the years they have, so.
Yeah, absolutely. A massive band, to be fair. And it's one of them. It's obviously Britpop was... Britpop and sort of the Manchester scene was absolutely manic at the time and absolutely heartbreakingly before my time. If there was one thing I could do in life, it would be to, you know, to spend a night at the Hacienda. I mean, just hearing all the stories about it, I mean, my gosh. I mean, it was a long time before my days. I was listening to, obviously, the Blossom podcast, which I was talking about earlier, and even those boys were saying, I wish we could have spent a night at the Hacienda. But Tim Burgess and the Charlatans, what a band. And I was lucky enough to meet Tim a year or so ago. He was doing his book tour. And then, obviously, he's been one of the heroes of lockdown in a way, and doing the listening parties on Twitter. It's the first anniversary today of both, obviously, the lockdown and the Tim listening parties. But to see Charlatans, it was my first time seeing them. And this absolute greatest of the 1990s, you know, it was the Charlatans, it was the Stone Roses, it was the Happy Mondays in the 1990s. And they were massive, you know, in the scene in 1990 when they released The Only One I Know. what I mean, tunes don't get much better than that. To see them at Old Trafford, you know, absolutely brilliant experience. And to see Tim up there, he's got a really trademark dance where he doesn't move his bottom half, but his arms just go, his arms are locked in, his elbows are locked into his side. And then there's just a bit of a jig going on. It's a very anti sort of Bez dance where it's just a locked in elbows and him just swaying to the music. And obviously a lot of the Charlatans tunes have that dance beat about them. And I think that their iconic sound to me is the keyboard and just the tunes that I think is Rob Collins, who unfortunately passed away, their early keyboard player, and the sounds that they released on their first few albums will always sort of stick with me. And I was lucky enough to see them at Glastonbury in 2019, just as good then. So, you know, it was a pleasure to be able to see them before Cortinas. And you're right saying, you know, there's this massive band. So you sort of take your pick, really, isn't it? It's brilliant. When I saw Cortinas a couple of years ago at Heaton Park, James were the support act for them. So I think at the same time, it goes to show you how... Yeah, exactly. It goes to show you how massive, you know, Cortinas are this generation's Manchester band. They are the biggest act that will play in Manchester, undoubtedly, unless Oasis ever reform.
Pigs might fly. some might say, oh, that was a terrible one. yeah, so, I mean, yeah, Charlton's... I'd love to see... Do you know what I'd love to see? I'd love to see a festival where we could just get all the big Manchester bands over the years, the Smiths. You know, I don't think you can get Joy Division because the lead singer passed away, you know. Charlatans, you know. James is a Manchester band, isn't it?
Yeah, James. Yeah, brilliant. With what's his name? But Tim Booth, the lead singer. Yeah, James at the same time. But you say no Joy Division, but we can have New Order. We can have New Order, obviously formed after the unfortunate death of Ian Curtis. One of the most incredible rejuvenation stories in music, going from Joy Division, which were their own icon in their own right, and then moving on from, obviously, Ian's death, and then moving into New Order with Gillian Morris, you know, Peter Hook, and Bernard Sumner, and going into New Order. That's a band who I'll just say I'd love to see someday, and I've not been fortunate enough to meet to see yet. So, yeah, I'm fully on board with you. Yeah, yeah, sort of talk about just a Manchester festival.
Just a Manchester festival, you know, Elbow, Doves, you know, all of them. Just get them all on. Let's organise a big Manchester festival. Manchester calling. So, I presume that the Charlatans were the last supporter before Cortinas came on. And we were speaking before we recorded that... Before Cortinas came on, Liam Frey came on around the time. Obviously, there was a big focus on Manchester healing, and Manchester is known became very focused around the B, because you might be able to explain this more than me. It's focused around this whole worker bees kind of thing. I know there's a bit of poetry kind of written around just after the attack. And Liam Frey kind of came to stage to read Ryan Williams's "And the Bees Still Buzz." And I believe you wanted to kind of recite that just to give a feel for kind of what it was like before the Cortinas had even, you know, started. That, you know, this poem set the tone almost.
Yeah, it definitely did. I mean, as we've touched upon, it was the gig transcended itself in some ways. It was meant to be Cortina's biggest moment to date. It was on the 27th of May, which a lot of you won't know, but it's the anniversary of Spike Island for the Stone Roses. They played the Spike Island gig, which, you know, is absolutely iconic, on the 27th of May. And Cortinas were going to obviously do their own historic gig for their generation at Old Trafford in front of 50,000. It sold out in, you know, in under half an hour. It was just absolutely massive. And then it just sort of, it became a different entity in its own right and it was sort of a vehicle for healing, for unity. And I think that's where the bee really comes into it, because the bee represents obviously the working side of the city. And we've got the same bee, you know, in the Burnley logo, as you know, donate to our factories and our hard work as well. But the bee also represents the unity, obviously, like the unity of a hive is the unity of Manchester as a city. And that unity was tested by the Manchester attacks. And it was an attack on music. It was an attack on the city. It was an attack on the Northwest. And there was a lot of, should we go ahead with the gig, etc.? Should we do this? Is it the right thing to do? But then everyone came together and thought, you know, this is an act of defiance. Hate won't tear us apart. Instead, we're going to come together and show them what we are, basically. And Liam Frey had done, they'd done a couple of warm-up gigs in the week in Sheffield and Halifax. And I believe at the Halifax gig, he'd recited the poem that I'll give a rendition of to give the listeners a sort of a feeling of how it was. And I was watching the footage of him giving that poem at Sheffield or Halifax, one of the two. And you could tell he was absolutely, it really touched him. He was shaking. He was spilling on the lines and stuff. And you could tell by the time it had come to Old Trafford, he'd been working on it all week, because he knew this was a moment of reflection before having our excitement and our gig. This was a moment to look back on for the people of Manchester and for the people at that gig. So he came on after the Charlatans, you're right, with the last support act. And then he came onto the stage without the band and just with a microphone on the stage and a sheet of paper in his hand. And he said, you know, this poem's gotten me through this week, and I'm sure it's gotten a lot of you through this week. And then he gave a rendition of the poem before going off, and it was a few minutes before the band came on. So just to give you a sort of a feeling of what it was like, obviously I'll give a rundown of the poem, which is by Ryan Williams. And I think it's an absolutely brilliant encapsulation of everything that Manchester is, the history of Manchester, the people of Manchester, and the diversity of Manchester. Because let's not forget, with all these attacks that have taken place, there's a real tendency of people to go the other way, to be Islamophobic in some aspects, and to attack the people that you associate the attacks with, which is completely unfair. And, you know, it's a tiny minority of the Islamic community that obviously conducted these attacks. And there's a lot in the poem about the diversity of Manchester as a city. You know, people come together in Manchester. It doesn't matter who you are. So I'll just give a little rundown of the poem, which I think really connected with people at the time. And I remember looking around and there was just tears in everyone's eyes when Liam Frey gave this rendition. So this is by Ryan Williams, and he wrote this just after the Manchester attacks. A grey Tuesday morning, 'neath Lancastrian skies, we wake once again to wipe tears from our eyes, forced to wear robes of weakness and pity, as cowards attack the very heart of our city. Like always, we'll comfort and hold one another, a Mancunian family of sisters and brothers. For a time, our strut is reduced to a stagger, but make no mistake, we'll rekindle our swagger. We'll learn how to live with another deep scar. If you think you can beat us, you don't know who we are. We're Collyhurst, Ancoats, Moston and Oldham and Bury, Ashton, Rochdale. We're Pankhurst and Turing, the Gallagher brothers. We're Morrissey, Marr and a million others. We're a city of workers, a city of shirkers, a city of tracksuits and Bibles and burkas. Vegetarian, Rastafarian, atheist, Jew, 100% red, 100% blue. We're each of us different, but never alone. In this cosmopolitopia, we get to call home. So come at us again, and again if you must. Time after time, we'll rise from the dust. You'll never prevail, not against us. This is Manchester, our Manchester, and the bees still buzz. And as soon as he delivered that poem, the whole place was in complete uproar. There's tears everywhere. And it was a moment of reflection, really, before the gig and before the excitement that we're going to talk about, just to look back on the unfortunate incident in Manchester and just to sort of come together as an act of defiance. And he went off, and within a few seconds, Morning Glory came on, obviously by Oasis, and that got the crowd going. It was just a beautiful moment, I thought, that you know, brought the city together. And what a brilliant poem by Ryan Williams, yeah.
Yeah, I think, I might be wrong, but I think it was a vigil held not long after the attacks. And I think that poem was read out at the town hall, if I remember rightly. I read it today before we recorded, and yeah, it's a beautiful poem, and it's so strong. And yeah, like you say, it Manchester is a special city, and around Manchester, you know, there's so many diverse communities in and around Manchester, and not one of them turned, you know, and yeah, it's just one of those cities. It's just, you're almost proud to be in and around it, you know, at times, when the world's going mad, thank God you know Manchester.
Exactly. I mean, obviously, neither of us are from Manchester, but sort of like, as we were touched on before, when before I went to the Stone Roses gig, and then after obviously seeing what an iconic band and getting into the Manchester scene, and then obviously it's such a short train journey from where we are. Yeah, I've spent quite a lot of time in Manchester, obviously going over there, and I really sort of got into the scene. There's a special community of Manchester, obviously. You know, there's such a diverse community, and you just had to see the empathy that the people had after the attacks. People were opening their doors to anyone who was in the area. People were flooding towards the arena to help out in whatever way they could. The taxis offered free lifts to anywhere you wanted. There was just that brilliant community spirit of coming together in the face of what is terror and what is, you know, trying to spread people apart in a way and tear people apart. But Manchester wouldn't obviously allow that to happen. And the vigil in the week and then the gig at the weekend, I don't think it's exactly what the people who carried out these attacks wanted to happen, because this wasn't in their master plan. This was our master plan, which is a very handy mention of Oasis, but what a brilliant act of defiance to show what Manchester was about in the face of these attacks.
Definitely, definitely. So, like you said, the poem was read and it kicked off with, well, the band didn't play it, but Morning Glory kicked off, you know, what was going to be an hour and a half, 2 hours of amazing music. What a way to kick off, okay, Morning Glory. That's just, I tell you what, like, if Oasis come back, they have to kick off their gig with Morning Glory. It's just, what a song. What an anthem.
Yeah. And Courtney, every time I've seen them, they start, well, that's their song to play just before coming on, because they know that will get the crowd buzzing. Yeah, and what a brilliant track to play before the gig. Though I do have to take issue with you. The song I want them to play, if they return, is Hello. Because there's the lyrics. It's good to be back. Good to be back. So, you know, there's something cathartic about that. It's good to be back. Certainly after the pandemic, anyway, that's the song I want Liam to play live, is Hello to start with. And then everyone going, it's good to be back, it's good to be back. Oh, get me goosebumps going already.
Reminiscing on the gigs. So yeah, let's go headfirst into the set then. I've got a set list in front of me, but I'll let you just fly through it. Go on. What can
opening up, there's one song which Cortina's always open up with, Are You In Love With An Ocean? And there's that special moment where the band come onto the stage, and just as the first chord of the guitar hits, the air turns from blue into an array of colours, because that's when the flares come off. And it was particularly funny, but also impressive. In the wake of the Manchester attacks, obviously they said, Cortina's fans, brilliant, come along, but please leave your flares at home, for obvious reasons. But somehow the people of Manchester managed to get the flares in. And as soon as the first chords of Are You In Love With A Notion came on, the air turned orange, it turned purple, it turned red. There was every colour of flare you could imagine. And in that front pit, I mean, I think there's a few years taken off my life with the flares that have gone off at Cortina's gigs and just bursting into, I mean, the first few songs, Are You In Love With A Notion, a brilliant track, gets the flares going, gets the crowd going. Cavortin second, which is another absolute rip-roarer from St. Jude, and then into Acrylic, you know, another absolute classic. And then Lucifer's Dreams, which was off the Mapping the Rendezvous album, which was just before, the year before, the Old Trafford gig. And, you know, just the whole way through the set, it was just non-stop. I mean, you've got Push Yourself, No One Will Ever Replace Us, Lose Control. And, yeah, as I said, the flares take a year off my life. And then also the just physical exertion of trying to stay alive in the front pit at Cortina's gig. You know, it's a pretty hard thing to do in itself.
Yeah, I've certainly seen seen videos of the Cortinas playing, and yeah, the pits, they do be balancing a bit. I love it, it's great. And yeah, the flares. Would it not be worth it though if you had a few years knocked off and you sat there, you're lying there on your deathbed and you go, oh, I could have had the extra few years, but then the flares, and you know. Yeah.
Absolutely, and it was just a brilliant time for me as well. Like away from just the gig, it's quite funny. The night before or the day before the gig was my stand down from high school. So we'd finished all our exams, and we had our stand down. So we had, you know, a big party the night before, and I don't know how well you quite know the area, but I went to Borland, which is a sort of in the sticks in Grindleton near Clitheroe. And a lot of the kids who went to Borland were farmers and lived on farms. So our big send-off stand-down was at this farmhouse in the middle of nowhere. And this was the night before the Cortinas gig. And then me and my group of friends walked to another guy's farm who we were staying at. And there's just photos of us walking around the farms of Sladeburn at 4 o'clock in the morning, trying to find this bed to kip in before the Cortinas gig. And I'm waking up at 7:30. To then go home and get ready for the Cortinas gig. But you're right, certainly was worth it looking back. And what a couple of days for me, the stand down and then into the amazing gig at Old Trafford, certainly.
Quality, that's quality. So yeah, you've kind of gone through the main set there. Any kind of songs stick out in your mind from that main set before? Because I know Liam Frey kind of went off and came back on to do solo. Before that, did any songs kind of stick out? Or
certainly, yeah, definitely. Because Lose Control always goes off incredibly well live. Bide Your Time, I think, is one of the most, not underrated, because Cortina's fans love it, but it's definitely, obviously, not got any attention outside of the Manchester world. But Bide Your Time is a brilliant track, and then it's a bit of a slow and jangly song, and then straight from Bide Your Time into Fallowfield Hillbilly, which is just an absolute snorter. You know, there's no room to breathe during Fallowfield Hillbilly. And then they brought it down into Take Over the World, which is a real anthem, and then the Small Bones, which is exactly the same. And then the next song, which was the last before the band went off the stage, and we'll discuss the acoustic set from Liam, was The 17th. The 17th was a pretty new song at the time because it had been released on the Mapping the Rendezvous album the year before. And The 17th, I think, is up there in my top three Cortina songs. It's just Liam, a piano, and it's just an absolutely cracking tune. And it builds and it builds and into a real anthem at the end. And The 17th really went down a treat with the crowd on the night. And it's just one of them. It had only been a year old, but it had really connected with the audience. So you had the Take Over the World, Small Bones, and The 17th to end the sort of band's first main set. You don't really get much better than that when it comes to Cortinas.
Well, you're on call, mate. I won't say too much. So yeah, The 17th, they played that, and then obviously Liam, the band went off, and Liam came on. Do you want to talk us through that kind of little kind of solo thing? Because, you know, one of the songs, it's a shame we have to keep touching on this, but one of the songs almost became an anthem of the time. So do you want to kind of talk us through that kind of solo set there?
It's not a somber moment because it's a defiant moment, really. And I think there's a lot of that. I know we keep touching on it, but it's not something to obviously be really upset about. It's something to be joyous about. It was a celebration of Manchester after the attacks. And in some ways, this gig, I wanted to choose this gig because it isn't my favourite gig of all time. But it was just, it's the most emotional connection to a gig. And as I said before, Cortinas were going, this was going to be their big crowning moment in a way. And Liam said afterwards, it wasn't, because it couldn't be after the attacks. He felt he almost couldn't enjoy himself because there was an emotional connection there. And it was all about providing something for Manchester, which is what this second acoustic song will be. And then in 2019, they played Heaton Park again to 50,000. And I was there that night. And that's probably my favourite Cortinas gig. And that was the real, that was the celebration of Cortinas that Old Trafford should have been, but it became something bigger than that. So for the second acoustic song, Liam played Don't Look Back in Anger, obviously a cover of the Oasis song. Now, during the week and in the years following the Manchester attacks, this song has sort of taken on a new life. It was always an anthem tune from Oasis, but at the vigil in the week, obviously in the town centre, there's a really moving video of a woman who is amongst the crowd with everyone's with flowers and holding a silence for those who had obviously been injured and killed in the Manchester attacks. And she just starts singing Don't Look Back in Anger by Oasis. And throughout her singing, a few more people join in and then a few more. And then you just hear these shouts from the crowds going, come on, everyone, we can do better than this. And then before you know it, the whole crowd at this vigil is singing Don't Look Back in Anger. And after that, it's just taken on this whole new life from being a cracking Oasis song to being a song that represents the heart of Manchester and the defiance and the unity of Manchester. So to actually, for Liam to play this, I mean, it's probably the most like emotional moment I've had at a gig. It was a really cathartic moment for everyone who was there in attendance, and he just played it on the acoustic guitar. And I was actually looking on Twitter at comments about Old Trafford, the gig today, and there was people on there who were saying they weren't at the gig; they were a few miles away. Even with the windows closed, they heard the crowd and Liam singing "Don't Look Back in Anger," and it was a brilliant moment. There's videos on there. Obviously, I was in the front pit at the time, so you don't really get a sense of how large it is with 50,000 people in this cricket ground. But there's videos from the top of the stands, and every single person in that venue is singing along to Don't Look Back in Anger. And there's people, you know, tearing up. There's people there who have been in the Manchester arena during the attacks. A really cathartic moment. Liam singing the song that, since the Manchester attacks, has sort of represented Manchester and represented the heart and the unity in response to terrorism, in response to even COVID nowadays, the real troubles we've been through with COVID. It is the song that sort of defines Manchester and its spirit, and it's taken on that new life. So yeah, he finished his couple of acoustic songs with that, and when went off stage, and then we go into the encore.
Yeah, well, you put it brilliantly. Just yeah, I can't really say much more than that. The encore, do you want to talk us through the encore? Then the band coming back on, and what kind of songs to go for? I already know that one's going to be on there that you're going to touch on quite nicely. but we'll talk through the others first.
It's the same for every band, isn't it? The encore is when the real big hits come out and the real ones that'll get the crowd going. So they opened up the encore with, which was another tune from Mapping the Rendezvous. I know I didn't, I sort of pooped down on Mapping the Rendezvous earlier. It's not a bad album, actually. And I'm looking through these songs, I'm thinking, that's from Mapping the Rendezvous. That is, what a brilliant tune. And Modern Love, a cracking little number from Mapping the Rendezvous. And it does really get going live. So that was the first song that came on with the encore, which was quite nice to hear a song from the latest album at the time. And then after that, they went into the big hits. So you had Here Come the Young Men, which is a real... It has a moshy element to it and an element of, yeah, you're going for it at a gig. But then it also has like a sort of end of the night feel in a way. I think if you go to gigs, you'll understand what I mean, where everyone's sort of tired and you're sort of blurting it out. And it slows down towards the end for everyone to sort of get together and sing along with. And then from there, there was no time to catch your breath because now we have the song from Cortinas that everyone will know, Not 19 Forever. And funnily enough, Liam couldn't help but make note of that before the song. And he said, this is for the radio stations who only know one song. And then they went into Not 19 Forever, which... if you know anything about Cortinas, you'll know this song has taken on a sort of cult-like status in like the indie scene, as this is the song where live, you don't really get much better than this. The scenes are very messy. So straight into Not 19 Forever, which is Cortinas' biggest song. It'll probably always be their biggest song. And what a cracking little number to mosh. It's not a particularly moshy song. It's sort of an anthem. I don't know the word for anthematic. That can't be a word. But it's certainly an anthem that ends their set at the end of the night. What took you so long? It goes on for 7 minutes or so. And that's the moment where everyone links arms and it's been a cracking night and we'll sing our hearts out because we're not long off the end of the gigs now. And then on Monday, we'll have to go back to work. So to end with What Took You So Long, it's the same at all their gigs. It's a cracking song to end with, and I'll just jump right to it because we've been talking for a long time now, and it's been brilliant. But I know people will be getting tired, so I'll skip into the end of the song. And it was the end of this amazing event, which had brought people together. It was shown obviously on BBC News as, look, this is even the country responding. It was the biggest event post the Manchester attacks. And after the song, there was just people just absolutely banging from the rafters, just going, come on, Liam, come on, Liam, this is brilliant. And then the whole band just linked arms, threw the microphone down and just came to the front of the stage. And I've got a video because I was right near the front, and you can obviously can't hear it amongst the thousands of crowds, but you can see Liam at the front. And you can pick him saying, this is for you, this is for you. And that's all he was saying, because it was for the people of Manchester, for the whole of the Northwest, for all of music lovers, because at the end of the day, the Manchester attacks were an attack not just on Manchester, but also an attack on creativity, on music, on live music, and basically on little children that were being brought to a music gig by their parents. So it was a really... cathartic moment at the end of the gig, and it was the end of something very, very special.
Yeah, and I think it's like you said there, couldn't have picked a better band. You couldn't have. It's just in a horrible way, right band, right time, almost.
Yeah, certainly. You couldn't pick a. It's one of them. It's just a strange coincidence. And it's also a brilliant coincidence in a way, in that they are the band that unites Manchester before any terrorist attack, before anything. This is the band of Manchester. And I was actually reading a review of Cortinas at Heaton Park today, which was a couple of years after the Old Trafford gig. And this is, as I said before, this is the gig that, this is their culmination, the Heaton Park in front of 50,000. It was the night that we couldn't have at Old Trafford because it was something more. And there was just in the review at the end, there's a brilliant one-liner, and it says, this is Cortinas and they rule Manchester. And you couldn't get more succinct and precise than that, because this is the band of my generation in Manchester. They may not be the biggest in London. They may not be known to people in Brighton, but for people in Manchester and for people in the Northwest who are into that kind of music, Cortinas are the band. And it was just sort of horribly perfect timing. But it doesn't have to be horrible, actually. It was perfect timing in that it did unite the city and the Northwest after the attacks. and it took on a completely new life. And it was a really special event, a really special event. Yeah, that'll always be remembered. As I said, it's not my favourite gig. You know, I've been to a better Cortina's gig at Heaton Park, but it was a gig with its completely with its own life of responding to obviously horrible events, but being a celebration of music and of Manchester.
And I mean, it's a weird way. It's going to be a weird question to ask. Obviously, a month or two later, after this gig, at the same venue, the One Love concert happened, which featured obviously the likes of Ariana Grande, Robbie Williams, and all that. Do you think that this Cortina's gig meant more to Manchester than a couple of pop stars rocking up into the city to make a bit of money? Do you know what I mean? Like, do you think this meant more, without being a bit daggers towards them, but like, this was a Manchester band, this, you know, do you think it meant more to the city? Like,
there's the fact that it was Cortina's and the fact that this was Manchester's biggest band, but then there's also the timing element. It was literally 5 days after the attacks. It was the biggest, it was the first post attacks event, really, in a way, and it brought together people not only because of the attacks but also the fact that it was people coming together in a very courageous way. It was the first major event in Manchester after the attacks. No one knew if this was a lone attack, whether it was going to be a series of attacks. There was a lot of security there, but I'll tell you now, just by looking at the flares that got in, you know, things could have happened there. It took a lot of bravery for people to come out and go to the gig. It certainly did mean a lot to Manchester. And the One Love concert, brilliant in its own right. And I think what Ariana Grande did, you know, she's been really brilliant in the aftermath of this. And her coming over for the gig, and for Chris Martin, obviously, and Coldplay to come over. And then for Liam Gallagher to come over and sing with Chris Martin, it was a brilliant occasion. And perhaps the two events are different in that the Cortina's gig was massive for Manchester, whereas the One Love concert was an incredible occasion for those who'd been directly affected by the Ariana Grande concert, who'd been there, because they all got tickets for the One Love concert, whereas obviously only the odd one obviously will have been at Cortina's. So I think maybe they both obviously mean a lot to different people. And there's the fact maybe that the One Love concert was an incredible set. It was definitely a celebration. It was more covered on nationwide TV, and it will have meant a lot for the people who were in the actual attacks themselves. Whereas just for Manchester as a city, the Cortina's gig was in its own life form, really. And a brilliant celebration as well.
Yeah, and you can see why I was trying to muddle around it, because you didn't want to, you know, obviously throw shade on one gig or another, because they're both very important ones. But like, as a city, you know, just fresh licking your wounds off what's happened. You know, it's for a Manchester band to come in, not like an international American band, for a Manchester band to come in and play, may have meant more to the city at that time than, you know, what it was going forward. So moving forward then, obviously we're in the pandemic, unfortunately. Don't know live music, unfortunately. You seem to be a lot further ahead than Ireland is at the moment. How are things looking for you in gigs, spectrums? Have you got anything booked post-pandemic, or is it quiet?
Yeah, it's going to be anything but quiet. It's manic. I mentioned this to you just before we came on air, and the fact that there's many gigs that I do not know that I'm going to yet, because there was many gigs that I bought tickets for at the start of 2020, and obviously they've all been postponed. On the festival front, I was lucky enough to get tickets for Glastonbury for 2020, which was obviously postponed. And it was going to be my fifth Glastonbury, so it was going to be a really special one. I was looking forward to that so much. And then looking forward to the 2021 Glastonbury and that's not happening again. So now I'm looking forward to 2022. But I do have a festival booked, and it's Kendall Calling. So fingers crossed that can go ahead. A brilliant little festival in the north, you know, in the Lake District. It's got a really nice heart to it, as Kendall Calling. I think there's maybe Leeds and Reading is obviously a massive festival, but it loses when they're that big. There's just not that similar heart to it. So Kendall Calling's a brilliant, a really big favourite of mine. And I just hope the lineup's now good. But then on the gig front, I was talking about DMAs, my favourite band. I know I love Cortinas, but DMAs are my favourite band in the world. And I've got Castlefield Ball in Manchester booked, which will be their biggest outdoor gig. With our biggest gig to date, a band from Sydney who have really obviously taken on with the Manchester crowd. So Castlefield Ball will be brilliant. And then I've also got them booked for the Alexandra Palace in London, which will actually be after Castlefield Ball. So it'll be another one of their biggest gig to date moments. So that'll be brilliant. And then, as I said before, I've got them booked in Bath as well, which is 2 days before the Alexandra Palace one. So I'm pretty much DMAs totally after lockdown. And I think they were even meant to play Kendall Calling. So I think I've seen them quite a lot this year. But then there's also a couple of other bands there. The Lathams I've got tickets for. And another Australian band who I don't think you'll know, but I do recommend, called Planet. And the Johnny Tuck, who's in DMAs, his brother is the lead singer of Planet. So you can see the connection there. So that's what I've got booked. I've got a lot going on, and I'm not sure when it is. So I really need to check my calendar.
you'd be on the road bike following their tour bus. All that cycling will just be there behind the tour bus. Following around all the venues.
That's what it'll probably come to, because I don't know when they're going to, with all the performance and rescheduling, I have no idea when they're going to be. It'll be a case of the week before, I'm like, oh no, I'm there next week. Oh, the the trains are all sold out. I'm going to have to cycle there.
Jesus, you won't be able to stand at these gigs. Oh, brilliant, brilliant. Well, at least you've got something to look forward to, even if you don't know when you're looking forward to it and all this. Hopefully it's we're coming out of it September, October time, so hopefully it's all going to fall into place for you. But thank you very much for coming on to the podcast and speaking about what is, I'm sure, Go Down in Folklore is such an iconic gig for Manchester. You know, up there with the likes of Oasis at Main Road, you know, and everything like that. Yeah, thank you very much for telling your story today, George.
Yeah, absolutely no worries. It's been a pleasure, really. It's been really good to go back over it and just to remember it in a way, and to sort of, I don't know, get something down in scripts in a way, and get it sort of said out loud, because it was a really incredibly special occasion for Manchester and for everyone who was there. So, you know, thanks for inviting me on and for letting me talk about it for so long, because I've absolutely loved it.
Yeah, and sometimes with these things, I think, I know you realise the enormity of the situation when you're there, but then you look back onto the history of it and you kind of go, bloody hell, like, this was 5 days after a major attack, you know, and we're coming together and these memories such as Don't Look Back in Anger and, you know, all this, like, you, in hindsight, these were memories that are going to stick with me until I'm on my deathbed. Like, you know, these are huge memories. So no, it's a absolute phenomenal story to tell. And we'll plug again the No Name Ever podcast. Burnley fans, non-Burnley fans, anti-football fans, any other fans you want to recommend to it?
Let's say Premier League fans, because we're going to be in the Premier League for years to come.
UK's favourite underdog. So please leave a review wherever you listen to this, and just like George here, we want your stories. So if you've got a story to tell on the podcast, please contact us at pitsandgigs@gmail.com or any of our social media at pitsandgigspodcast. As per usual, we never say goodbye, we just say
This podcast is part of the After Dark Podcast Network.